ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This August, Science Week is blooming around the ABC.
Flowers don't usually inspire fierce competition.
Unless you're asking Australians to pick their favourites.
This Science Week, we're celebrating Australia's wildflowers.
Vote now for Australia's favourite at abc.net.au/science.
Celebrate Science Week with us in August on ABC Radio National and at abc.net.au/science.
Do you have any hacks for getting yourself to go back to sleep when you wake up in the middle of the night?
Look, I don't.
Apart from scrolling the NEJM website.
Or sending you an email at 2 in the morning.
Sending me emails from The Lancet.
I do find that if I just don't lift the phone, I do go back to sleep. So that's my hack. Just don't lift the phone.
Okay, so the screen doesn't work. So that then genuinely next time you send me a text or an email at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'll say you're breaking your own rule.
You will indeed. It's a while since you've had one. You might notice.
Actually, you know, I just thought you didn't love me anymore. I thought you were sending them to Shelby instead.
No, I don't want to wake up Shelby. I know she's sound asleep.
My notifications are off.
Well, sneaky, sniffy sleep hacks is actually what we're talking about today on What's That Rash?
The show where we answer the health questions which simply everyone's asking. So Dollar emailed in about a sleep event they went to where one of the experts made a throwaway comment that if one is having difficulty getting back to sleep, try smelling a pungent odour as it breaks some receptors in the brain or something like that. I was taken by the comment and wonder if it would be possible for you to explore this topic further. Well, you're partly to blame for this event, aren't you, Tegan?
This is an event that I was part of, a non-ABC event. This throwaway comment intrigued everyone. So I'm actually glad that we have an excuse to talk about it. And it really, Norman, has opened a, I don't want to say Pandora's box because that was bad. It has opened a treasure trove of nose and sleep-related research. So much more nose and sleep-related research than I thought was possible.
So let's just get the obvious out of the way so we can just talk about it, you know, normally. We are not talking about farting under the covers.
Of course, that's where your mind went.
Right? So we're not, and sadly, we're not talking about that.
So, I mean, we can talk about whatever we want. It's our podcast.
True.
If you want to talk about farting under the covers, maybe that's the perfect scent for Delore to smell.
No, that's the subject of another podcast altogether, and we're not going to talk about it.
Okay. We actually have done an episode of What's That Rash on farting. I do recommend going back and listening to it. I got to use a whoopee cushion more than once as a sound effect. No, but we are talking about scents, S-C-E-N-T-S, and sleep. And when I think of scents and sleep, Norman, I don't think about farting. I actually think about lavender. That to me is the thing that's sort of culturally most attached to sleepiness. So maybe that's where we start, because it actually has quite a long history as sort of a sleep-adjacent herb.
Yeah, sleep-adjacent. I mean, originally there were therapeutic properties attached to lavender. The English botanist John Gerard in the 17th century described various ways that lavender could be used. Abbess Hildegard in the 12th century mentions that lavender shouldn't be used as a food, but as a strong scent that might help with lice and evil spirits. So lavender has been around a while, in a sense, as aromatherapy. But, you know, even in the 100 years ago in the 20th century, it was still not about sleep, the use of lavender, but it's become synonymous with sleep in recent years.
Yeah, I mean, in the early 20th century, it was used as effectively an antiseptic, which is an interesting but probably not that relevant sidebar. It really wasn't until aromatherapy took off in the 1930s onwards. And then aromatherapy really kind of had a big moment from about the 70s onwards. And lavender has sort of taken to the fore in terms of the herb that people associate with sleep. I don't know if it's just because it's like relatively easy to farm. It smells kind of nice. What sort of evidence do we have that it actually helps with sleep though, Norman?
So it's not as if there's no evidence. There has been some evidence that certain aromas such as lavender, chamomile, jasmine have been associated with improved sleep quality, reduced anxiety. Why should we be surprised at that? Because when you sniff something in and it interacts with the olfactory epithelium, the olfactory lining at the top of your nose, that's brain adjacent. Mm. And the connections, to understand why aromatherapy is not necessarily nutty, is that this part of your brain seems to have a direct line to your amygdala. And your amygdala is that part of your brain which processes emotion associated with memories. And so it is conceivable, perfectly conceivable physiologically, that something you sniff has a direct effect on the brain. And certainly you can imagine, we've all experienced odours that make us feel unwell or make us feel alert or more stressed. So this is not a nutty idea here at all.
I think it's worth pointing out that some of these studies are actually funded by companies that make smelly products, like aromatherapy. So there are potentially some conflicts of interest at play here too.
There are indeed.
The other thing I wondered about as well is whether it becomes a bit Pavlovian, that if you start to spray some lavender essential oil on your pillow before you go to sleep each night, then you start to associate that smell with sleepiness. And then when you smell it, your brain sort of goes to a sleepy place, teaching yourself that this is a sleep cue.
And it's interesting that you say teaching yourself, because there's increasing evidence, before we get to this whole idea of getting yourself back to sleep by inducing quite acute smells, there's increasing evidence that brain training, cognitive training to try and prevent dementia or keep maintain your cognitive function, is enhanced with olfactory training, smell training.
What?
Yep. Small study, an Australian study, where you would do traditional cognitive therapy, maybe cognitive training, I should say, which involves processing speed, memory training or something like that. Then you, at the same time, do smell training, which is actually smelling.
Smell training, imagining my nose like lifting weights.
Well, it is like lifting weights. So you get specific odors and you sniff them, and you sniff them on a repeated basis. You know, there are sticks which do this, and you can actually repeatedly train your brain to remember certain odors and be able to pair them. And it seems to enhance general cognitive training. It does your head in, but it's thought to be part of this notion that your sense of smell goes directly into the brain itself without other parts of the brain being involved. So normally when we experience something in our environment, it goes through our conscious brain, the cortex, then into the thalamus, which is deeper into the brain, and then into other parts of the brain in terms of the hippocampus and memory, amygdala and emotion, whereas odors seem to go straight from your nose up to the amygdala, bypassing all that, and is thought to stimulate the brain and create a situation, this is the theory, where it allows cognitive training to occur. So that's, I mean, this is just general stuff about how, you know, this whole idea of aromatherapy is not nut job stuff. This is stuff which has a physiological effect. It may not be that specific aromas have specific therapeutic effects, but it could be.
My brain is racing now, Norman. I'm wondering if you're using scents to ward off dementia or as part of that brain training, are like sommeliers less likely to get dementia than the average person?
That's a very good point. No idea.
Further research is required. Okay, so we're talking about smelling and sleep. We're talking about lavender. Maybe it helps you get to sleep. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe you have trained your brain to do that. What about in the other direction? Can you have a smell so strong that it rouses you from sleep?
Well, we're notoriously bad at being roused from sleep by smells. So, for example, if there's a fire, smelling smoke doesn't always wake people up, even though you might be able to measure a response in the brain, which is why you need fire alarms. So you need sound as well to do that. You know, people have shown that you can interfere with sleep with, say, peppermint, and you get certain cranial nerves that come directly from the brain, stimulated by smells such as peppermint. And so there is a specificity to some odours.
What about like smelling salts?
Well, that goes to the story that we started this with, the question that we started with, which is the event that you chaired, where they talked about really pungent odours having an effect on the brain, which allows you to go back to sleep.
Right.
Do you want to tell us about that research?
Yeah. So basically, it's not really research, but it's people who are in this space who've kind of figured it out for themselves. So the event that I was part of included Professor Bruno van Swindren from the Queensland Brain Institute at the University of Queensland. And he sort of threw this out as like, oh, if you want a tip to like get back to sleep if you wake up in the night, do what I do and smell a strong odour. And I will admit now, Norman, that we're deep in the episode, that I originally thought about farts as well. I was like, what, you just ask your partner to fart and stick your head under the covers? I don't know. It's more complicated than that. But I basically went back to Bruno and asked him to explain in more detail, which of course he did. And he said he'd learnt the trick from a sleep research colleague, and he says it has a solid basis in neuroscience. And this is coming from someone who is a neuroscientist, so I'm believing him. He says, insomnia is often caused by anxiety, which involves a part of the brain called the amygdala, which you mentioned before. You often go into sort of anxious loops that are hard to snap out of, hence the insomnia. Smell, as you said before, Norman, is the only sense that bypasses the thalamus filter. It goes straight from the nose to the amygdala for some reason, which is why odours often evoke strong emotional responses, as we said. So if you can smell a strong odour while you're in one of these anxiety loops, that odour can kind of break the cycle momentarily reset your brain and kind of help you go back to sleep again. But he said there's a couple of things. It has to be strong odours and you have to not know what it is before you smell it.
It's got to be a surprise.
So what he's got is a collection of little vials next to his bed.
Vials.
So one has nyokmam, like, you know, a fish sauce, lavender is one, aftershave, vinegar, cloves, and then has them randomly next to the bed, waking up in the night, feeling anxious, getting in that loop, can't break out of it. Pick a vial at random, cop a sniff. Put the lid back on, go back to sleep again. And he said, I can't guarantee it will work for everybody, but it did work for me and the neuroscience makes sense.
Indeed. It reminds me of our episode on cramps and pickle juice.
Yes.
Our favourite topic now.
Which you mentioned because you had Norman, our correspondent, had a cramp and found that pickle juice did in fact work. So you think it's something to do with the shock?
Well, that's the theory behind pickle juice, is it hits the back of your throat and does something neurophysiologically to reset your brain. And according to our correspondent, Norman, it works like a dream.
worked like a dream that turned into a nightmare that turned into a pickle juice cramp.
And I don't know whether Yannick Sinner, when he can't sleep at night because he's worried about his next event, you know, sniffs pickle juice, but we'll
see. Next time, snort the pickle juice. It'll get you out of the anxiety spiral and solve your cramp problems.
You know, and this direct line that you've got to the brain makes sense because, for example, with fire, you don't want any delay to your response to an odour that might actually preserve your life, might actually save your life.
But and hang on. You told us that smoke didn't wake us up.
Exactly. But if you're roaming through the savannah grassland with your family group and you sniff in the air and you smell smoke, that presents an alert. You might actually have a sense, in the olden days, you might have had a heightened sense of smell of animals in the environment. And just the way animals can smell danger, we might be able to smell it too. We might have lost the awareness of that. And then there's much more positive things where you smell just gets into your memory, where a certain food smell, certain smell of cooking reminds you of your grandparents, reminds you of a time when you were a child.
Well, on that, there's at least one study that looked at biologically meaningful odours modulating sleep. So at least for babies, being able to smell their mum reduced their crying, induced feeding behaviours, which, you know, could it then also accelerate them going to sleep. So while we're getting crazy with smells, what do we know about smells and dreams?
So with dreams, mixed picture, some odours do affect, you know, REM sleep, but remarkably little. Even intense odours do not seem to affect dreaming, but a very hard thing to study.
So interesting. And there's even been research that's tried to look at kind of using the power of smell to do things like treat addiction.
Yes, this is more psychological conditioning where you associate an awful smell with a behaviour you're trying to break. And what's been shown in some psychological research is that the emotion you want to associate with the habit you want to break or not start is disgust. Disgust is actually much more profoundly effective than fear. They've shown, for example, with kids, this is West Australian research actually, which looked at what it takes to put kids off smoking. And it's not fear of lung cancer or things like that. So they developed ads, which by the way got banned because they were so effective. So what do kids feel most disgusted about is the toilet. Mm. So somebody reaching into a toilet, pulling out a cigarette and lighting it, you know, kids go, ugh! And then the other is taking a cigarette to the mouth and lighting it and it turns into a cockroach because kids get cockroaches. So that sense of disgust. So people have tried to associate, say, for example, hydrogen sulfate, rotten egg smells with smoking to try and condition you out of smoking. And it will work with some people, but it's Whether it lasts or not is another issue.
Well, yeah. So they gave people the smell of cigarettes together with the smell of either rotten eggs or fish as people were sleeping. The idea that our brains are more malleable in sleep. And at least in this study, there was a significant reduction in smoking following this conditioning during sleep. So maybe there is something there.
Maybe there is. But do you want your brain messed around with while you're sleeping? I'm not so sure.
I don't want to be in a lab with scientists waving smells under my nose as I'm sleeping. Well, okay, so we're maybe waking up in the middle of the night, we're maybe smelling either fish extract or lavender at random. Those aren't the only sleep tips we can give people, though, if they're looking for a good night's rest.
People know the basics, which is dark room, no screens, don't drink alcohol before you go to bed, keep your caffeine away from, you know, probably the afternoon on, don't eat too close to bed, don't go exercising too close to bedtime, you can have a warm bath, but there are other things as well. We'll come back to that in another What's That Rest.
You're just throwing out these pearls of wisdom, Norman, as if everyone knows them. I think there's going to be some surprises in there, but sure, let's save that up for another time. Delore, thank you so much for the question and for the opportunity to talk about our noses and sleep, because it's been an absolute blast.
And it's another example of our N equals one series, which is, you know, if you've got a favorite...
Neuroscientist equals one.
That's right. So if you've got a favorite N equals one using smells, odors, aromatherapy, send them in. We'd love to hear from you.
thatrash@abc.net.au. I would particularly love to read your weird sleep hacks. Tell us how you get back to sleep if you wake up in the middle of the night. Make it weirder than Bruno's one.
What's in the mailbag?
Well, there's an email here from Pamela in reference to our episode on body hair that we did a couple of weeks ago. Pamela says, as someone who lost all my body hair during chemotherapy, I have to concur with Tegan's alopecia suffering friend. Without nasal hair, your nose drips frequently. It also takes a considerable amount of time for nasal hair to grow back and the dripping to stop. I'm 2 years post-chemo for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and it still happens, though not as frequently. This is one of those things that nobody ever warns you about when you have chemo, possibly because it isn't discussed. The other Pamela says is that you temporarily lose your fingerprints. I only found out because I have an older iPad which uses fingerprint recognition.
Oh, so that's time to rob a bank.
Right. Had you heard that before?
No.
My gosh. Well, Pamela says, as a former nurse who worked in the radiotherapy and oncology department in St Thomas's Hospital, London, I certainly didn't know.
Thank you, Pamela. Fascinating. And long may you not need any more chemo.
Indeed. Well, thanks for your emails. You can always send your emails to us, thatrash@abc.net.au.
See you next week.
See you then.